We're doing a quick review of the book of Bereishis, and Mezrat Hashem, I hope to get to the book of Shmos as well. We're doing this in our Judaism 101 class. The idea is that now at the end of the semester, we should try to remember these things. Our goal is really that we should be able to memorize what is in each parsha. And this is easier in the book of Bereishis. And as we evolve, the book of Shmos is slightly harder. Vayikra is even harder. But it's important to know. You guys, Bezrat Hashem, you'll be working people, and your children are going to come home, and they're going to want to talk to you about the parsha. And hopefully you'll know which parsha it is, but you should also know what's written in the parsha. So it's worth taking the time now. I tried summarizing the parshiot. I started with 6 examples. Bezrat Hashem will do the rest as well. So that you see how easy it is to summarize a parsha. You could really summarize it in the longest parsha is 10 points. Parsha's told us so far. Let's quickly review. We know in Bereishis we have the description, 7 days of creation, concluding with Shabbos. Then we know that Adam and Chava are created, and the snake, the serpent, the nachash, whatever he was, convinces Chava to eat from the forbidden fruit. Chava eats, she gives Adam to eat, and then God comes and they're hiding in the tree, and God says, where are you? And they say, we're here, we heard your voice, and therefore we're hiding. And we're immodest, and God says, how do you know? And it comes out they ate from the forbidden fruit, and then Chava gets 10 curses, the snake gets 10 curses, Adam gets 10 curses, and they get chased out of the Garden of Eden. And then they have 2 children, Cain and Hevel, and we'll continue in a second. You had a question?
Why did you say Nachash or whatever it was? Is there a doubt that it was a snake?
According to Chazal, it wasn't a snake.
What
was it about? Chazal say it was a snake that could talk, that had legs, that had intelligence.
Yeah.
It's not what I would call a snake.
So
we have a class in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer that discusses it, if you want. And if you want, you could ask tomorrow night, and I'll try to answer you. Right now, we got to move forward. Tomorrow night, no, Thursday night. The rule is you could ask any question you want, and then I'll try to cover it. But now we just got to try to cover ground. So we have Cain and Hevel, 2 sons. Cain and Hevel, they divide. Cain deals with agriculture. Hevel deals with animals. And Hevel has 2 twin sisters. Cain is jealous. Hevel's wife, twin sister, is more good looking than his wife. Or Hevel has 2 wives. Cain is jealous. They bring an offering. Cain's offering, he brings from the worst fruits. Hevel brings from the best fruits. Hevel's is accepted lovingly by God. Cain's is not. Cain is jealous. God tells Cain, hey, it's not a problem, just do better and I'll accept your offering as well. And Cain doesn't take up that offer. He vents his jealousy. They go out into the field, and Cain tells Hevel, I'm the agriculture master here, the field is mine, you get off my earth and deal with your cattle off my earth. Hevel's cattle have been trampling his fields, and he says, you get off my earth, I own the earth. And Hevel says, if I get off your earth, you take off the clothing from my animals. I own all the clothing. If you own all the earth, I own all the sheep. And Cain jumps Hevel, and Hevel wins the fight. And Cain begs for mercy, and Hevel lets him go. And then when Hevel isn't looking, Cain pounces him with a rock and starts beating him, trying to figure out, how do I get this thing called life out of him? He beats him on this side, that side. Finally, Hevel's dead. God comes to Cain and says, where's Hevel? And Cain says, God's asking you. Maybe he doesn't know. Cain says, am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's watcher? And God says, you know, all the blood of all the generations that are still to come are wailing from the ground, the blood that you spilled, and you are cursed because of what you've done. Now, wherever you go, the land will not accept you. You won't be able to rest. You'll never feel like you could settle down on the earth, which is Midah Keneged Midah, right? Cain said to Hevel, you cannot rest on my earth. And now God is telling Cain, you will have no resting place on earth. And God says, and Cain says to God, God, you're so awesome, you contain the whole world, you can't contain my sin, you can't forgive me, there's no room for repent. And Cain starts weeping and pleading before God, and God says, okay, because you've begged and you want to do tshuva, you're begging for mercy, so I'll take off part of the punishment. Until now, Cain was supposed to be a hunted man. Cain said, how can I live as a hunted man? If every animal, if every human, if everyone's going to try to kill me, how can I live this way? So God says, fine, I'll make it that the animals will still be scared of you. You won't live as a hunted man, but you will have to travel. And Cain has children, and here we have the concept that one who kills a human being, it's like he kills the whole world. We view every human being as a world unto himself, because the whole world began with Adam and Chava, who had two children, Cain and Hevel. When Cain was killed, half the world population was killed. The world could have been double the population, potentially, right? Every man, the whole world began with one man. So now we know, you kill a human being or you save a human being's life, it's like you saved the whole world. We value every human being. So Cain continues, Cain procreates his children. We have 10 generations to Noah. I can't go into all details, there's a lot to talk about. You could go online and see the full overview of the classes. Right now we're just trying to do a quick overview. 10 generations to Noah, mankind devolves, they're sinning, they're capturing whatever women they can, and it's survival of the fittest, and there's incest is rampant, and taking other people's wives is rampant, and God isn't happy. So God says, I'm not happy with this human being I created, I'm going to wipe him out. We're up to Parshas Noach. God tells Noach, I'm going to destroy the world. You have 120 years. Start building the ark and telling people to repent. They mock him. They don't want to build the ark. They say, if God will build the flood, we'll destroy your ark. You're not going to get away with it. God brings the flood. Noach goes into the ark. He brings into the ark all the species of different animals. Two of a kind of the impure animals. Seven of a kind of the pure animals. And God surrounds the ark with all kinds of wild animals. For 40 days, it's raining and the underground springs are going up. According to the Malbim and others, that what happens during the period of the flood is that the earth tilts on its axis, meaning before the flood the whole positioning of the earth and the solar system was different. According to Chazal, there's an argument as to what God did in the solar system to bring about this unnatural state that there's no day and no night and a flood. But something was done, and there's this unusual flood where all of earth is wiped out, and God makes a miracle and Noach lasts there in the ark. And then after it's all over, we know the story of sending out the raven. The raven doesn't want to go, sending out the dove, and the dove the first time finds no landing place, the second time comes back with a branch of an olive tree, and the third time doesn't come back, and Noah knows that there's dry land around. The dove found the resting place, and finally when Noah comes out of the ark, God says, you saved all the animals, from now on you're allowed to eat animals, and you are all, God makes a pact that he will never again bring a flood to wipe out all of mankind. Noach gets drunk, and Ham, his son, sees him drunk and castrates him to ensure that there will be no more heirs. That way, he says, it's enough. We can divide the land between three of us. Who needs more brothers? And when Noach awakens from his drunken stupor, he realizes what his son did, and he curses him that Ham will be black and all his children will be slaves. The people evolve, and we have the evolvement of different nations until finally we have the period of the Tower of Babel. The king over all of mankind is Nimrod, who is an idol worshipper, and Nimrod wants to solidify his rulership. So Nimrod has them build this huge tower that is instills fear in everyone who sees it, and in unifying all of mankind, he wants to unify everyone to idol worship. And God sees that there's a threat to monotheism's existence, and so God intervenes and confuses everyone's languages, and we have the disbursement of mankind at that period, and we have 10 generations till we have Avram. 10 generations from Noach to Avram. Avram starts traveling. He is persecuted as a monotheist, and then God tells him, go to the land that I will show you, and we're up to Parshas Lech Lecha. Avram goes to the land of Israel. When he comes there, after God told him to come there, there's a famine. Test. There had never been a famine in world history. The first famine is after God told him, go to the land of Canaan. He comes to the land of Canaan, and the first time in world history there's a famine. Avram, after being told by God to come to Israel, must go down to Egypt. God promised him he'd be wealthy, and he's losing his wealth. As he goes down to Egypt, he has to take loans. He comes to Egypt, and his wife Sarah is abducted. Talk about a test. So, his wife Sarah is abducted. We know Pharaoh takes her, and Pharaoh wants to have her. Well, God doesn't let him, and then Pharaoh has to release her, and he gives Avram a lot of gifts, asks for forgiveness, and Sarah and Avram now are wealthy people, and they travel back to the land of Canaan, together with Sarah's brother Lot, who is also their nephew. I mean, Sarah is Avram's niece. Avram married his niece. So Lot is her brother, his nephew. Now, they come to the land of Israel, and Lot's shepherds say, you know what? God promised Avram the land of Israel, and Avram has no kids, so must be Lot's going to inherit Avram. So we could take whatever we want in this land. And there's a fight between Lot's shepherds and Avram's shepherds. Avram's shepherds say, you can't do that. God didn't say we could have it yet. God said, ultimately, Avram will have it. Not now. You can't take other people's property. And Lot's shepherds are ultra pious. They say, no, we believe. God said, of course, don't you believe? God said you're going to have it. So now you can take it. Very often, the people who do the greatest ills to other people are people who present themselves as being ultra pious. So Avram tells Lot, look, buddy, I'm staying here. This is where I'm supposed to be with God. You can go that direction, you can go that direction, I'm here. Don't get too far away so we can be close. Lot looks out to the Jordan, and near the Jordan he sees that there's an area that's flourishing from all the water. He sees that over there are girls walking around in bikinis. He sees that there's a rampant improper misbehavior. And Lot says, that looks interesting, I'm going to go there. So Lot goes there and he gets what he went for. He gets all the women. He says, I don't need Avram. I don't need Avram's God. He leaves monotheism. He leaves the behavior that he had learned in Avram's home. And now there's been an ongoing battle for 14, 15 years between four kings and five kings. And finally the four kings come with all their armies and they destroy giants. There were giants among the five kings. And they destroy them and they say, we're going to get Avram, but first we'll take his nephew Lot. They come and they capture Lot, his nephew. Avram is so wealthy that he has on hand over 200 knights sitting on hand at a moment's notice. That's exceptional in those days. Over 200 knights are sitting in his castle, in his series of tents. And at a moment's notice he gathers them and they run out and they attack the four kings. And they destroy these very powerful four kings. Right, that's the number. Gematria Eliezer. Eliezer, right, 380. So Avram is unusually wealthy and powerful, and he destroys these four kings, releases his nephew Lot, and Lot continues living in this land. And then God appears to Avram and promises him, don't worry, you will have the land of Israel. There's the famous Brit Ben Avtarim, the covenant between God and Avram, that there will be four kingdoms that will conquer his children, but ultimately his children will last beyond it all. And Avram asks, how will they last when there's no temple? How will they gain forgiveness? And God says, when there's no temple, they will read the Parsha of Karbanos, they will read about the sacrifices, and that will attain their atonement. So I aspire them are very careful about this, and Ashkenazim should learn from them, to read the Parsha of Karbanos every morning and every afternoon, by Shachrit and Mincha. Sarah sees Avram's an old man. He isn't having kids. He tells Avram, take my maid Yishmael, take my maid Hagar and have kids. Hagar gets pregnant. Hagar starts treating Sarah lightly. Sarah comes to complain to Avram. Avram says, do what you think is right. Sarah starts afflicting Hagar. Hagar runs away. An angel appears to Hagar and tells her, get back to Sarah and you will have a child and his name is going to be Yishmael because God has heard your affliction. And she has Yishmael. At the end of the parasha, Avram and Sarah undergo a name change from Avram and Sarai to Avraham and Sarah, and God gives them the commandment of having a bris milah, and God tells them, you will have a child in a year's time. And Avram laughs, and God tells him, oh, the child's name is going to be Yitzchak. And here we begin Parshas Vayera. Avram has just been circumcised. The beginning of Vayera, God comes to visit Avram. Avram is 3 days after circumcision. He's sitting there lamenting that he has no guests. God has made it a scorching hot day so that no guests trouble Avram. After Bris Milah, a person has to rest. After Bris Milah, a person has to rest. After Bris Milah, a person has to rest.
We
have a great great grandson of Avram Avinu sitting here in the back of the room. He just underwent a bris milah today. Mazal tov. We want to remind him that after bris milah, a person has to rest. So you see that 3 days later, God is still making it scorchingly hot, so Avram should stay in bed.
Wait, don't do it. By Friday, it's supposed to get less, the temperature. I don't want hot or weather. Slicha.
Okay. So God sees that Avram really, really wants to do this mitzvah of achnasat ochim. So God sends three angels looking like Arabs. And in those times, there weren't yet Arabs, because Arabs came from Yishmael, and Yishmael is only 13 years old at this point. So they're the nomads of the desert of the time. They're not the Arabs of today. And Avram sees these angels, And he runs out to greet them, and he invites them into the house. Says, "But first, wash off the dust on your feet, because that's what you worship. And in my house, we don't bring idol worship. Let me give you some bread to eat." They come, and he prepares them a king's feast. And from here, we learn the trait that a righteous person speaks little and does much. Abraham says, "I'll give you some bread," and in essence, he made them a whole feast. He spoke little and did much. And the angels come and they tell him that Sarah is going to be pregnant. Sarah hears in the tent and she laughs. And God tells Abraham, "Why'd she laugh?" Abraham asks Sarah, "Why'd you laugh?" Sarah says, "I didn't laugh." Abraham says, "Yeah, you did." So the angels are headed to Sodom. Two of the angels are headed to go and destroy Sodom. And Abraham has seen this vision of prophecy where he's told that Sarah will be pregnant. He's told that Sarah laughed in this vision of prophecy. And he's told that the angels are headed to destroy Sodom. And Abraham starts negotiating on behalf of Sodom. Maybe there are 50 righteous people, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. God, would you destroy a city if it had 10 righteous people? You'd destroy the righteous together with the wicked. And God says, "No, if there were 10, I wouldn't destroy it." And Abraham says, "Less than 10, I have no bargaining power." And finally, they conclude the conversation. The angels head out to Sodom, and on that day Lot has been appointed judge. They enter Sodom, and Lot sees them, and he says, "Hey, buddies, you don't want to be caught dead around here. I'll take you around about route to my house, because this is a city where they torture guests. They don't want any guests here." So he takes the guests to his house. He gives them, they say, "No, we'll sleep in the street." And he says, "No, come to my house." And they're fighting back and forth. So finally he tells them, "You guys come with me." And he grabs them and he takes them to his house. He's feeding them the meal, and they run out of salt. And his wife goes to the neighbor and says, "We need some salt." So the neighbor says, "Oh, fine, I'll get you some salt." So the wife says, "Yeah, you know, my husband, this weirdo, comes from a foreign town. They take in guests. If we didn't have guests, we would have had enough salt, because he's such a weirdo who has to bring in guests to the house. We're short on salt." So the neighbor hears, "Aha," and the neighbor's wife tells her husband, and the husband tells the townspeople, and they gather and they surround the house, and they start banging on the door, and they say, "Send out the people that came to visit you today, because we want to know them biblically." And Lot comes out of the house, and he says, "Please don't do such an evil thing. I have two daughters. I'll send them out to you. You do with them what you see is fit, but don't harm these people. They came to my house. They're my responsibility." And they say, "Oh, you move over. Let us into the house. Let us deal with these people. You just came here. You're a newcomer. You were just appointed judge today, and you think you're going to tell us what to do. You're going to change everything here." And they start approaching the house with their sticks and stones. And the two angels take their hands out. They pull Lot into the house, and they blind all the people around the house. And they tell Lot, "Go gather your family members. We're destroying the city. God has heard the wailing of the one girl who tried to help the poor, and they put her on a rooftop, covered her with honey, and had her stung to death. God heard her wailing, and God said, enough sinning in the city, and God's going to overturn the city."
Was so, third daughter?
You said that. I never found the source for it. You said it once. I haven't yet seen a source for it. If you find it, I'll be happy to see it. I'm curious. There's a Medrash in Pirkei Reveleza that mentions the story. But to say that what you just said, I haven't yet seen, I'll be happy to see it. I'm not saying it's wrong. I just don't know the source for it. The angels are... Lot tries to go and convince his son-in-laws. They tell him, "You're nuts. What? The city's going to be overturned. Come on, you're nuts." And Lot goes back home. He sees his efforts are futile. And the angels tell him, "We got to go." And he says, "Just a second." And he starts collecting money, trying to put more and more in his pocket. And eventually the angels say, "Buddy, time to overturn the city. We got to go." They grab him, his wife, the two daughters, flee, take him out of the city. And they tell him, "Now you run forward. Don't look back." And Lot says, "You know what, there's a city here that hasn't been around as long as these cities. It's 2 years younger than them. It's not as sinful. Let me run to that city, Tzoar, that city don't destroy, the fifth of the Sodomite cities." So the angels say, "Fine, we'll accept what you said, but don't look back and get there. You got to get there, because by sunrise we got to overturn the city." And the people of Sodom were being punished at a time when the sun is up and the moon is up, so that they can't claim, "Oh, the reason God was able to take us down was because this God wasn't around or that God wasn't around." God wanted the whole world to know, "I did it at a time where the sun's out, the moon's out, whoever you think is God, I'm stronger than all of them, and they have no impact on me." And God overturns Sodom at that hour. Lot's wife turns around and looks at the city, and she becomes a pillar of salt. The animals come and lick that pillar of salt, and every night the pillar gets licked to the bottom, and the next morning, miraculously, still shoots up again. In the time of the Gemara, you could still see her. The Gemara discusses a special blessing you make when you see the pillar of salt that was supposed that the Gemara said was Lot's wife. Today, they say that that's where the Yam HaMelech is.
I saw that actually,
The Gemara on Shabbos discusses. If you want to see Lot's wife, go up to Tveria. The Gemara says how you could see her.
Yeah,
okay.
I saw a picture, maybe the 19th century with this salted rock of Lot's wife.
I don't know. Okay. Lot is in this city and he thinks, gee, maybe in 2 years they'll overturn this city too. Maybe they only gave me a 2-year extension. Meaning they said they won't overturn it now, but who knows what's going to happen. So Lot runs up to the mountains with his daughters. He has 2 daughters and he goes up to the mountain. In that cave, so his daughters think the whole world's being destroyed. God's decided to destroy the world. So they're in the cave. And the daughters say, well, how do we bring more people to the world? How did Adam and Eve do it? Well, their children married their sisters. So you see, in a time of need, incest is permissible. If there's no other choice in order to keep the world running, we have no choice. So they know their father's not going to agree. So God makes miraculously, they should have grapes in that cave and they make wine. And they give their father wine to drink and he goes to sleep and he falls asleep. And when he's sleeping, so the girls come and live with him. Each one does it once. And ordinarily a woman does not become pregnant, a virgin, from the first time she's with a man. But these girls, because they had... ordinarily. But when you're a chatan, I'm willing to discuss it with you. Okay?
Well, you can pray.
I wouldn't count on it. I didn't say it's impossible. I said it's uncommon. So, there are 3 reasons, biologically, why this is so. When you're a chatan, I'm willing to discuss it with you. I'm talking to you science now. I'm not talking Gemara. The Gemara says it, but I could tell you 3 reasons why, biologically, there is going to be less statistically. Okay? I'm willing to discuss it with you when it's relevant. The daughters, because they mean L'shem Shemaim, they become pregnant from the first time. And one daughter is less bashful. She calls her son Moav, from the father. She's not ashamed of the sin they've done. And the other daughter calls her son Ben Ami, from my nation. And these two evolve into the great nations of Ammon and Moab, from which comes Ruth the Moabite, from which comes David HaMelech, and Naamah HaAmonit, who was the continuation of the Davidic dynasty. Avram is very embarrassed. Everyone's talking about how the whole world's being careful from incest. From the time of the flood, everyone's been very careful not to do improper things in this area. And then now his own nephew's just done incest. So he travels away, he wants to distance himself from Lot, and he travels to Gerar, where his wife Sarah is abducted by Avimelech. And this shows us what Chazal taught us, that Sarah was unusually beautiful, even though she was an old lady. Think about it. The woman's 100 years old? I don't know, she's an old lady, she's above 90. How old she is exactly? She is 90, right. 90-year-old lady is being abducted by the king. Gee, so Chazal says she was very, very good looking. Avimelech gets punished, he doesn't come near her, and God tells Avimelech, if you want the women and the people of your house to have their apertures opened, then you have to ask Avram to pray for you. So Avram prays that they should be cured, and after he prays, the women could again give birth and the people could again go to the bathroom while their apertures are reopened. And when Avram prays for them to be cured, so his own wife gets cured. And we have that tradition that when one prays for someone else and he needs the same thing, so God, before he answers his prayer for someone else, answers the prayer for himself. If a person, so Avram was praying for Avimelech, and God cured Avram and Sarah first, and so Sarah becomes pregnant. Sarah gives birth to Yitzchak, and when Yitzchak becomes 3 years old, they make a party. Yishmael starts shooting arrows at Yitzchak and telling him, buddy, I'm going to take care of you. You're not inheriting a stitch of dad stuff. I'm the firstborn. I'm the inheritor. You're from Avimelech. All the years Sarah was with Avram, she never got pregnant. She spends one night in Avimelech's house and suddenly she's pregnant. You're not inheriting a thing. And when Sarah hears all this, Sarah tells Avram, I'm not going to stand here and wait for the time when Hagar and Ishmael are going to fight with me over your inheritance. You send them away now when it's clear, when you're still around, you send them away to ensure that it's very, very clear that they're not your inheritors. And this is another test for Avram. God tells Avram, she's right. Listen to Sarah. That's the right thing to do now. And so Avram sends Hagar and Ishmael away. And Avram recognizes that Ishmael has turned to idol worship. He has left the whole dynasty of Avram Avinu. He has left monotheism. He has gone for idol worship. He has gone to become a bandit. And so Avram isn't giving him any of his wealth. His other children Avram will give presents to. To Yishmael, Avram doesn't give him a thing. He gives him a flask of water and says, be on your way. Hagar and Yishmael go out into the desert. Yishmael is ill. Yishmael has a fever. He's about to die. Hagar sits there weeping, and God reveals to her a well, and he tells her, don't worry, God's going to take care of you, and your son will grow up to be a great nation. Avimelech comes back to Avram and makes a pact with him, and that's Beersheba. And then we have the whole story of Akedas Yitzchak, Yitzchak's binding. And that is the end of Parshas Vayera. We go into Parshas Chaye Sarah, and we know Sarah passes away when she hears about how Yitzchak was bound and almost slaughtered. The Satan comes and tells her the story, she passes away. We have the whole story of Avram's purchasing the Maris HaMachpelah, the haggling with Ephron. And after Sarah's buried, Avram says, gee, I almost lost my son Yitzchak, I've lost my wife now. My son was almost taken from me in Akedah. I better make sure that we have a continuation to this dynasty. We got to get Yitzchak a wife. And so Avram sends out to his relatives to find, he sends the slave Eliezer with a promise that he will only bring a wife back, but he won't promise to bring Yitzchak there. And Eliezer goes, comes to the well. He asks God for a sign. The girl that agrees to give me to drink and says, not only will I give you, but I'll give the slaves to drink, which is a very, very important trait. Someone who wants to help beyond what's asked for. That's a very important trait in a man, and even more so in a woman. That sometimes you ask for something, and okay, that's what you wanted, here, you can have it. And sometimes if you ask for something, the answer could be, that's what you want, here, you can have this, and maybe this could help you too, and maybe that could help you. Well, that type of attitude is what Eliezer is looking for. And when I started dating, my mother told me that that's the type of attitude you need in a wife always. So I'm telling you guys what my mother told me. So Eliezer sees Rivka, she passed the test, and Rivka's from his own family, and although she's 3 years old, she's very, very bright, and Rivka tells her family, I'm with him, and she goes with him, and he brings her back. Yitzchak marries her and loves her, and their relationship evolves post-marriage. And after Avram has married off his son, so now Avram remarries, he remarries Keturah, he has many, many children. The Midianites come from Avram, many different nations, nomadic tribes come from Avram, like from the second marriage of Avram. And then Avram passes away and is buried by Yishmael and Yitzchak, Yitzchak and Yishmael. And we're at the end of Chaye Sarah. We'll conclude tonight, Bezrat Hashem, with Parshas Toldos. And next time we'll move forward from here. Rivka's been barren for 20 years. So now she's 23 years old. And the Parsha begins, they got married when she was 3. So now she's 23. Maybe they got married when she was 14. Different opinions in Chazal, whether she was 3 or 14. So which makes her 34. What?
Small difference.
I don't know. Cleopatra was all 14 when there were world wars over her. So, and that's not going back thousands of years. That's going back. What? So Rivka's been barren, and they pray to Hashem, and God accepts their prayer. She becomes pregnant. Suddenly the pregnancy is very, very difficult. So she goes to the prophet and asks him what's going on here, and the prophet tells her, You're pregnant with twins, and these twins are going to be opposites. They're going to be at odds with one another throughout their life, but the younger one will overcome ultimately. And the younger one is really the chosen one. When they're born, you see that they're very different. One is red-skinned, and he has hair. He's born like a mature adult. And the other one is smooth-skinned, and he's born holding on to the heel of his big brother. And they call him Yaakov, like the one which will be there at the end, at the heel. And the older one they call Esav, which comes from the word Asui, man, already made, is born ready made. Esav is born so red, so they're worried maybe he has a blood problem. They don't circumcise him for years until he's old enough, and then he says, you ain't touching me there. And Esav remains uncircumcised for life. Yaakov is circumcised, they grow up. Initially they seem like they're the same. When they become 13, 14, so one of them starts growing longer payas, he has his tzitzis sticking out, he always looks like a very, very big tzaddik, and that's Esav. And the other one does everything according to the letter of the law, he's not always interested in impressing everyone, he doesn't have to grow long payas, he doesn't have to show everyone his tzitzis, he just does what's right, and that's Yaakov. Esav at the age of 15 loses his grandfather, Avram passes away, and on that day Esav murders, rapes, steals. Esav has totally left the fold, and he walks in from the field after this extraordinary day in Esav's career, and he's famished, he's just murdered, raped, he's just done a lot of very important things in his life, and he's famished, and Avram's cooking Yaakov is cooking lentils to feed his father, who's mourning the loss of his grandfather. And Esav walks in and says, I'm going to open my mouth, you just pour in that red stuff you're cooking. And Yaakov says, hey buddy, you're the firstborn here. With you leading a life like that, I want the rights to the firstborn. I'll give you the food, but you give me the rights to the firstborn. And Esav says, what are the rights to the firstborn? To be a servant of God, to serve in the temple. Buddy, you tell me something. You servants of God, you're going to die or not? You're going to die just like me. There's no difference. So what do I care? What do I need to be a servant of God for? I'm going to die. You're going to die. So you'll be a servant of God and you'll die. And I won't be a servant of God and I'll die. So what do I need it for? Sure, you can have it. You just give me those lentils. So Yaakov gives him bread and he gives him lentils. And Esau finishes the meal and he walks out and says, ha, what a fool. I gave him the job of being firstborn and I got a pot of lentils for the price. And everyone who heard the story thought, like, what a fool Esau is. And Esau got the nickname Edom, the red one. He was so intent on that red pot of lentils that he gets the nickname Edom. There's a famine, and Yitzhak thinks, okay, I'll do like my father did. I'll go down to Egypt. God tells him, no, Yitzhak, you don't go down to Egypt. It's not always right to mimic what the great people before us did. In your instance, it's wrong for you to go down to Egypt. I will help you out. You will multiply, you will be fruitful, and you will inherit the land of Israel. They go and live in the city of Gerar. Avimelech has been eyeing Rebekah and he's very interested in her, but he peeks through the window one day and he sees Yitzhak and Rebekah are acting like husband and wife. And here's a word to the wise: from here you see that husband and wife are supposed to show affection to one another. People sometimes think, if I'm extra pious, then you do the mitzvah and that's it. There's no affection outside the bedroom, and there's no affection inside the bedroom. There's just one thing that has to be done. It doesn't work that way, no. Yitzhak and Rebekah are a prime example to that. A pious person knows to show affection in a modest fashion. Avimelech was able to peek beyond the curtain. He was able to see what was going on. But being modest is not contradictory to showing affection. Being modest means that one does it in a modest fashion, but one is supposed to show affection. So when Avimelech sees this, so he calls Yitzhak and he says, hey buddy, you told me she's your sister. She was almost taken for the great man of the people, meaning I almost took her for myself. And what'd you do this for? So Yitzhak said, because you guys are disrespectful. You guys don't have their heritage. I walk into town. The first thing you ask me is, who's that good-looking broad on your side? That's the way you greet a person. Why don't you ask me, hey, you got a place to stay? You ask me, what's with her? So what am I going to say? She's my wife? Maybe you'll kill me to take her. I don't know. So I said, I'm not going to risk my life. I'll say she's my sister. So Avimelech says, okay, stick around. You can stay here. And Avimelech puts out a decree. No one's allowed to touch them. The Plishtim see his wealth. They see how God helps him flourish. And they start being jealous. So Avram had helped Philistine society by digging many wells. Out of jealousy of Yitzhak, the Philistines start filling up all the wells that his father Avram dug. And Yitzhak digs them again. Avimelech tells him, look, you're becoming more wealthy than me. Leave. You're too great. You can't stick around the country where you're going to be more wealthy than me. Yitzhak leaves. Avimelech figures, you know what? If he's so powerful, I got to have a pact with him too to ensure he never makes war with me. He might say that I broke the initial pact that we made with his father Avram because I didn't treat him nicely. I chased him out of town. So Avimelech comes with his chief general and he tells Avram, he tells Yitzhak, let's make a pact. And Yitzhak agrees to the pact. We paid a heavy price for Yitzhak's agreement to the pact. And then Yitzhak sees that he's getting old and he becomes blind. And he calls in his firstborn son Esav, which he thinks is the better son. And he tells him, son, I want you to go bring me some food. Go hunt for me some special food and I'll give you a blessing. Rivka hears this and Rebekah knows that Yaakov is really the one who's a tzaddik. And tells Yaakov, you go, I'm going to make the food your father likes. You bring him the food, you get the blessing. Yaakov says, but I'm smooth-skinned. He's rough-skinned. Dad can't see, but he'll feel me. He'll think it's me. Rivka says, no, I'll put the goat skins on you and everything will be okay. Yaakov's 60 years old. He listens to his mother. She prepares the food. He comes in. His father says, who are you? He says, I'm your firstborn. I'm Esau. Yitzhak calls him over, gives him a kiss, feels him out. He says, you know, I don't know, you sound like Yaakov, but you feel like Esau. Fine. And he blesses him. And they finish the meal. Yaakov's about to leave the tent, and Esav's huffing and puffing, entering the tent. Yaakov stands behind the door. Esav walks into the dark tent. He walks right past Yaakov. He doesn't see him. And when Esav walks in, Yaakov runs out. And Esav comes in and says, "Dad, get up, I got the food." So when Esav walked in, God made it that Yitzchak felt like Gehenna walked in, felt like perdition walked in. When Yaakov had walked in, so Yaakov had worn the special suit that Esav had taken from Nimrod. There was a special suit. When Adam and Eve realized that they were naked, God made them a special suit out of the trees of the Garden of Eden. And that was the suit that still smelled of the Garden of Eden. Now that suit went down from one to the other until Nimrod stole it. And then when Esav murdered Nimrod, he took that suit, and he was scared that his wives would steal it from him. So he felt the only person he could trust was his mother, Rebekah. So he said, "Ma, you hold on to this for me. This is a special suit." Rebekah, when she's sending Yaakov in to his father, so she tells him, "Wear this suit. This smells of Esav. This is Esav's suit." So Yaakov wears Esav's suit, and when he walks in, Yitzchak smells, "I smell Gan Eden. I smell the Garden of Eden." Now Yaakov's left, and when Esav walks in, Yitzchak says, "I sense Gehenna." Esav walks in, and he says, "Dad, get up. I got the food." So Yitzchak says, "Who are you?" So Esav says, "It's me, Esav. You just sent me to get the food. What do you mean? I got the food. Come and eat." And Yitzchak says, "Who came before and got the blessings? May he be blessed." Yitzchak was about to say, "May he be cursed. Who stole your blessings?" And then he said, "Wait a second. No, this is Gehenna. That was Gan Eden. That one, may he be blessed." And Esav says, "Really? What's going on here?" So he tells him, your brother tricked you." So Esav says, "This is the second time he tricked me. First time he stole my rights to the firstborn." Yitzchak says, wait a second, what do you mean? He did what? So Esav tells him the story. So Yitzchak thinks, so he was the firstborn Yaakov. He already bought the rights. Then he should have gotten the blessing. Good that he got the blessing, very good. Esav begs and wails and says, "Dad, you got to give me something." Yitzchak says, "You know what? I said to him in the blessing that all his brothers will be his slaves. What can I give you? Whatever I give you is his. You're his slave. I blessed him that you should be a slave. So what can I offer you?" And Esav starts crying and he says, "Dad, you got to have something left to give me." So Yitzchak tells him, "Okay, I'm telling you, when he sins, you will overcome him. When he's down, he'll be up. And you will have the power of the sword." Esav thinks, "Gee, I'm going to bump off my father and I'm going to bump off Yaakov. No way I'm going to be his slave." And Esav starts plotting to kill Yaakov. Rivka gets wind of this. And she calls Yaakov in and says, "Yaakov, you run to my brother. I want you out of here till Esav cools down." And like a smart wife, she goes to her husband and doesn't tell him the exact story. She says, "Yitzchak, look here. Look at all the wives Esav married. They're all idol worshippers. They're making our lives miserable. Life isn't worth living if Yaakov gets a wife like Esav did. We got to send him to a better family to find a wife. Let's send him out to my brother Lavan. Over there he'll find a good shidduch." So Yitzchak says, "Good idea, Rivka." Calls in Yaakov and he says, "Son, I hereby bless you knowingly with all the blessings that I got from my father. All the blessings that I have that God gave my father Avram to inherit the land of Israel, etc., I got from my father Avram, and I give on to you, Yaakov. Now you go out to Lavan and find yourself a good wife, and may God be with your assistance, and come back." That night, Esav is sleeping. Yaakov sneaks out of town and goes to learn for 14 years in this marriage of Shem and Aver on his way to go and contend with Lavan. Esav wants to kill Yaakov, but Yaakov's out of sight, out of mind, and he figures, "I'll still get him." Esav doesn't chase after Yaakov, but rather sends his son Eliphaz and tells him, "You go kill Yaakov." And we're going to pick up over here with when Eliphaz finally catches up to Yaakov. He's got his armor, and he's ready to kill Yaakov because his father told him, and Eliphaz is a good son. What's Esav's one big midah? Esav does kibud av v'aim. Esav listens to his father. That's Esav's claim to fame. That's the one mitzvah Esav did well. And his son, going in his footstep, Eliphaz, says, "I got to listen to Dad. Dad said to kill Uncle Yaakov, so I'm going to kill Uncle Yaakov. Come on, father's a father." So Eliphaz catches up to Yaakov, and that's where we'll pick up the Zat Hashem next time.